from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last weekend, while Mitt Romney and Barack Obama were trading shots over Bain Capital and outsourcing, the Green Party picked its candidate for president of the United States. Her name is Jill Stein. She told delegates both major party candidates have been captured by corporate interests, that they aren't standing up for the American people, that it's time for a Green New Deal. Polls say Americans are fed up with politics as usual. Is this the option? This hour On Point, we'll talk with Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein. Green Party's convention was in Baltimore on Saturday. They named Jill Stein their candidate for the presidency of the United States. Here she was at the convention.
Voting for either Wall Street candidate, for Mitt Romney or for Barack Obama, gives a mandate for four more years of corporate rule. Every vote they receive is an endorsement of the deadly trajectory that we are on for the American people and the planet. It's time to change that plunge into catastrophe, and that change starts with voting for real change.
And the delegates said amen. She is now the candidate. Joining me in our studio is Dr. Jill Stein, Chicago native, now a medical doctor from Lexington, Massachusetts. She's been the Green Rainbow Party's candidate for Massachusetts governor twice, in 2002 when she ran against Mitt Romney, and in 2010. This weekend in Baltimore, she was chosen as the Green Party candidate for the presidency. Jill Stein, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's great to be here.
We're plunging into catastrophe. What's going on? What do you mean?
Well, you know, ask any American walking down the street how they're doing, you know. And, you know, you hardly need to ask because the news is just out there. And unfortunately, it's not getting better. Americans are still losing their jobs. We don't have adequate wages. Millions of Americans are underwater, at risk for losing their homes. The cost of health care continues to skyrocket, as does the cost of higher education. Our civil liberties are under attack, and our climate future is very much imperiled. Yet, the wealthy few are doing better and better all the time, just, you know, over the top, rolling in dough. And the political establishment is not fixing it. In fact, they are making it worse, imposing austerity on the American people while they continue to squander trillions of our tax dollars on wars, Wall Street bailouts, and tax breaks for the wealthy. So in short, the American people are at the breaking point, and our job is to turn the breaking point into a tipping point to take back our democracy and the kind of future that we deserve that really is achievable, that is within our reach.
Europeans have gone for green parties. Americans generally have not. Now, there's a lot of dissatisfaction you can see it in any poll with the way the country's going, with Congress, where Republicans and Democrats are heavily represented. But do you see evidence that Americans are really ready to unbuckle from the big two-party system that has dominated in this country so wholly for so long?
And it's a very difficult habit to break because there are so many institutions that lock voters into these rigid two choices. The fact that it's very hard for alternative parties, for opposition parties to even get on the ballot. It's very hard for us to be heard. We are not a corporate party, so we are not rolling in dough. We depend largely on volunteers, on citizen participation. The other parties are very much rolling in dough, so they can capture the airwaves and just flood people with the advertising. So these are hard habits to break, especially in this country. The reason the Green Party is doing well in other countries is because they're not locked into this system. Also, we have this winner-take-all voting thing, whereas other countries have much better ways of ensuring that the will of voters is reflected in the outcome of the election through ranked choice voting, through proportional representation. These are simple reforms, and they could do away with that so-called spoiler thing, that fear campaign that keeps people locked into old habits that are poorly serving
us. You're talking here, for example, about Ralph Nader, the year 2000. A lot of people say that his presence on the Florida scene may have cost Al Gore that state and cost Al Gore the election. And he was a Green Party candidate.
Exactly. And I would contest that conclusion in and of itself. For a variety of reasons. Studies show actually that Nader brought out a lot of votes. Most of his votes came out for him. And if I can just add one other fact, and that is that if you add up all of Nader's votes, all of them, forget who they might have gone to had Nader not been there, just add up all his votes. Those votes were a tiny fraction of the votes that Al Gore lost to George Bush.
But of course, it came down to very small numbers in Florida, and there are many people who do not forget that.
And any third party could be held accountable for that. Not just Ralph Nader. There were other third parties running as well, including from the far right. So any of them could have been held accountable for that. I think this is clearly a matter of scapegoating and directing it against the most threatening opposition, which I do believe is the Green Party, because it is the majoritarian party that actually reflects the true needs and urgent crisis that the American people face. So it's very much to the Democrats' advantage to try to scapegoat them and goad people into this fear campaign of not standing up for what they need.
We're going to talk about your agenda, what you'd like to see happen in this country. But I want to stick with the idea for a little bit here that we need a third party, that the two that are in power don't offer a choice. The president, Barack Obama, who was elected on hope and change, was in Cincinnati yesterday, Jill Stein, and he said the coming election represents a stark choice between two fundamentally different philosophies, at least on the economy.
This election is about more than just two candidates or two political parties. It's about two different visions about how do we build a strong economy. You know, and the good news is you're the tiebreaker. The choice is up to you. The choice is up to you.
Two fundamentally different visions between Republicans and Democrats, the president saying yesterday, President Obama, and voters are the tiebreaker. The choice is up to you. And he's not talking a choice between them and the Green Party, but between his vision and Mitt Romney's vision, between Democrats and Republicans. Can you really say that there's not a gulf between these two visions? What do you mean it's all the same?
Yes, for the visions, indeed. But the problem is the actions, not the visions. And we now have a clear track record of what those actions have been from this president. Again, you know,
President
to give
Obama,
him
the hope and change.
That's right. And to give him credit for being a magnificent orator and for, verbally, sculpting out the vision at any rate. But, you know, his actions from the get-go have been not that vision at all. And in issue after issue, President Obama basically embraced the policies of George Bush and in many cases even went further.
Like
the Wall Street bailouts, you know, $700 billion in the TARP program under Bush, which President Obama was actually the major proponent of. John McCain was not. Barack Obama, the candidate, very much was. The Republicans weren't. With his support, TARP was passed. But then since the Bush administration, we have given far more away to Wall Street, some $4.5 trillion already dispersed, plus another $16 trillion in emergency
loans. You're including the Fed's
actions
and all kinds of
things. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's right. But, I mean, look at even the war, for example, where, this was going to be the peace president. But the reason that we actually brought troops home from Iraq, as I'm sure you know, was because this was George Bush's withdrawal date that the president was not able to postpone, which he worked very hard to do. If he had his way, we would still be in Iraq right now. Among his first foreign policy acts was to intensify the bombing in Pakistan. He went on to spread the bombing, the drone wars, into Somalia, into Yemen, to surge the troops into Afghanistan. So we still have somewhere around twice as many troops as we ever had under George Bush in Afghanistan. So, you know, on so many counts, this has been a president whose actions have been very much, along the lines of the Republican vision, I'm sorry to say. Look at, for example, so-called Obamacare, almost indistinguishable from Romney Care. This was a Republican idea generated by a Republican think tank. We actually have a track record here in Massachusetts that's not looking so good. The costs of health care continue to skyrocket. A recent study done by Physicians for National Health Plan showed that what this plan does is basically pit the poor who benefit, it's true, against the needs of the near poor, who are very much hurt economically and whose costs have really skyrocketed, and the cost to taxpayers, you know, continue to just explode.
You would go for a single-payer plan. You'd go for all kinds of green jobs. You're talking about cutting military spending in a very
big way.
Right. You've got an agenda that we're going to look at. But the Obama White House might say, excuse us, Dr. Stein, but we were up against some pretty big headwinds from a Republican opposition in our first term. We need another term to get this done.
If only. I mean, when the president came into office, he had an enormous public mandate, yet his first actions were to bring in the very perpetrators of the economic catastrophe. That is Larry Summers, Timothy Geithner, who managed to look the other way while Wall Street committed waste, fraud, and abuse
on his watch. His economic inner circle.
Exactly. And, you know, and then Obama went on to, you know, to start bombing the hell out of Pakistan. And, you know, all of this was done while he still had an enormous public mandate. He also had ground troops. You know, he had the American public and voters and activists who were really ready, willing, and able to go to work for him. But he put them on the shelf, and instead he brought in Goldman Sachs and Wall Street. He brought in Jeffrey Immelt to head his jobs council,
head of
for
General
God's sake.
Electric. Dr. Jill Stein is the candidate, the Green Party candidate for President of the United States. You want to hear another way? Here's one. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Is this what the country needs? She wasn't the only contender. Actress and comedian Roseanne Barr was also in the race for the Green Party nomination. Here she was at a Green Party presidential forum in San Francisco in May, explaining why she, Roseanne Barr, was running.
I'm running for president of these United States because I realize that I can fix everything that is wrong with a very simple solution. I can also give common sense direction to those in whom it is lacking, namely those in government. I realize that I care about our country and its people more than I care about bankers and their profits, and that is what is needed in the executive office today.
Dr. Jill Stein outpaced Roseanne Barr by a good margin to win the candidacy in Baltimore on Saturday. Here she was there, speaking of the Green Party's role in moving the country forward.
If we want to change the broken political system, what we need is not just a new law or a new lobbying effort, or a fresh face in the same old corrupt system. We need a new, unbought political party that can put people of integrity into office.
A new unbought political party. Her backers would like to see her on the stage with Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama in debates. They made that very clear. Let Jill debate, but it is, as the news services said, an ultra long shot. Nevertheless, she's out there. She's campaigning. She's with me in the studio today. Let's do some housekeeping practicalities here. How many states are you on the ballot in right now? How many will you be on in November? Is there any chance of something happening here?
Absolutely. We expect to be on the ballot for at least 90% of American voters, and that means somewhere between 40 and 45 states, maybe a few more. So far, we have made just about every single deadline and threshold for getting on the ballot. So currently that's about 21 or 22 states. We have active ballot drives going on in about 22 more, and we expect to be there. And for people who'd like to help out, go to jillstein.org, and you can help ensure that voters can actually have a choice when they walk into the voting booth.
And let's put the phones open for some of those people. Listeners, you can join us. Are you looking for a third-party candidate this year, a Green Party candidate? What's your question about what Jill Stein and the Green Party stand for? Is a third-party vote a wasted vote, a statement? Are you ready for a Green New Deal? Green jobs for all, huge cuts in the military, universal health care, higher taxes for the rich. What do you think? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Jill, let's go right to our listeners. Dustin's calling from Fort Benning, Georgia. Dustin, welcome. You're on the air with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi, Jill. I'm an infantry officer down here at Fort Benning. I've been in the Army for about going on 5 years now, and I just wanted to completely agree with what Dr. Stein was saying about military spending and with our president as well. From what I've seen from my perspective, we have a system that it really doesn't matter anymore who our president is, who the executive is, because these people are literally all bought and sold by companies and corporations, mostly defense contractors, that are going to perpetuate these wars. Obviously, we've been at war now for 11 years, and you know, I myself don't exactly know why. You know, I can't.
And you're in what? You're in the Army, you're saying, Dustin?
Yes, sir. I am an infantry officer, so my job is to take control of a platoon or company level element and go fight the enemy.
Dr. Stein says she would cut defense spending by 30, 40, 50%. What would that do? What would that mean to you? Are you for that?
Well, here's the thing. I'm for that as long as it doesn't place any of any soldiers in harm's way. Because what happens is normally when defense spending is cut, the burden is still there on the military. So what we would need to do is we need to get out of every single place where we do not belong, i.e. the Middle East, Indonesia, all these places where there's a perceived threat, which is mostly hype. We need to get out of these places, and then we can start cutting back. Until we get out of these places, I wouldn't recommend it, but I'm all for it as long as, you know, the promise is actually kept instead of just talk. Because, you know, I'm so sick and tired of, you know, seeing these presidents. I was actually hopeful for President Obama to say, you know, hey, we're going to pull out of these places, we're going to get these wars over. And, you know, now there's talk of us extending our contract in Afghanistan and keeping troops almost on a permanent basis.
Dustin, let me take it to Dr. Stein. I appreciate your call from Fort Benning. Dr. Stein, Jill Stein, how much money can you save, can you achieve from defense cuts without putting the country at risk?
Exactly. Well, first, I just want to say thank you to Dustin for saying it so well. I think no one can say it as well or with as much moral high ground as you've actually talked about it with. And I agree with you completely. The whole point here is to get our men and women in the service out of harm's way, because a big military budget, unfortunately, does not guarantee them safety. In fact, to the contrary, it just bogs us down and embroils us in ever more conflicts. We have now essentially a war on terrorism, which is taking place anywhere at any time for the foreseeable future. And we're relying on a small group of very self-sacrificing men and women who are repeating their tours of duty over and over. The greatest threat to their well-being right now is actually from suicide, you know, which exceeds deaths on the battlefield, you know. So the system we have is extremely abusive of our service people. And in terms of how do we defend the country, well, spending these trillions of dollars that we have spent in Afghanistan and Iraq has certainly not made us safer. You know, it has just ground us down. The more we participate in these, civilian bombings and war crimes and all these other terrible things that have been revealed through WikiLeaks and other just plain experience, you know, the more we are alienating people on the ground, the more we're helping to recruit people into the ranks of the terrorists that we're supposed to be fighting.
So what do you see as the fundamental threats to this country's well-being, military and otherwise?
I think the real threat to our security right now is our economic security. We are perhaps on the, you know, teetering on the brink of yet another economic catastrophe that may come out of Europe. It may come out of the latest scandal, the LIBOR scandal. You know, every day there is a new
interest rate rigging. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. There's a new Wall Street scandal. And you know, the Boston Globe yesterday, in fact, had an article on the front page about how, gee, at the same time we're having all these scandals, isn't it too bad that Dodd-Frank, the bill that was supposed to correct these ills, has gotten so bogged down from the lobbyists, it's just not moving forward. You know, what did you expect? Unfortunately, this is what we have learned to expect. This is the rule and not the exception from what we are getting from, corporate
So there's the economic threat. Parties. You're the Green Party. That presumably means you see an environmental threat as well.
Exactly, and they go hand in hand. So we have, and in fact, the Army leave it to the Army and the Department of Defense to be one of those who is sort of leading the pack in recognizing that climate is a real security threat.
But that's been cut back and scaled back by Congress just in the last few weeks, their efforts to go green, the military efforts to go green.
Of course, no doubt. I mean, Congress is cutting everything right and left, which is another reason. I mean, that too, it's just one more point about why we do not have a livable future. We are on an absolutely deadly trajectory right now, whether you're looking at the economy, the rising rates of unemployment, wages continue to drop. This president has put, you know, more free trade agreements on the table. He's quick to criticize Bain, you know, and he has every reason to criticize Bain, and he's absolutely right. But he's got to talk about what enabled Bain to, you know, to commit this exploitation of people and the environment and our economy to start with. These were rules changed by the very people he brought into his administration, and he's continued to expand that framework for taking our economy down.
You're a medical doctor. What are you doing in national politics?
I am practicing political medicine, you could
say.
What
does that mean?
That means if we're going to fix what ails us, whether it's these chronic diseases that we shouldn't have in the first place, or whether it's
economic, environmental,
our healthcare system, our education system with the costs skyrocketing beyond the reach of any ordinary mortal. If we're going to fix these things that ail us and pose real threats to our future, we have to first fix the broken political system. And, you know, this was how I, you know, a nice doctor like me, came to be in a godforsaken place like this, learning it the hard way as an advocate who thought, gee, there are some really good solutions here. We can create a whole lot more jobs through conservation, through weatherization, and clean renewable energy than we can through the energies that are making us sick.
You talk about
nuclear.
You talk about a Green New Deal. What is that? Is that what that is? Weatherizing? What is a Green New Deal? Your Green New Deal.
Exactly. It is all of the above. The Green New Deal is an emergency program which will put 25 million people to work in full-time living wage jobs. It will jumpstart the green economy for the 21st century. And in doing so, it not only ends the economic emergency, it also calls climate change to a halt. And by the way, it makes wars for oil obsolete.
25 million people put to work doing what, Dr. Stein? Doing what?
And so it's a whole spectrum. We're talking about making a sustainable economy. That means sustainable not just environmentally, but sustainable economically and socially. So that means the usual green jobs, as we just mentioned, including local organic agriculture, public transportation,
okay,
clean manufacturing, all the green stuff, plus the jobs we need to be socially sustainable, to meet our needs for teachers. Let's hire back those 300,000 teachers who've been laid off. Let's get the nurses that we need, the child care, the after school, the violence and drug abuse prevention, the affordable housing construction. The idea is this is not a top-down, Washington-driven, cookie-cutter program. This is a bottom-up, community-driven program so that national funding is put in the hands of communities who have the ability to decide what they need in order to become sustainable. What
25
kind of
million jobs addressing
need.
Climate change, what water, soil, fisheries, forest, fuel, fossil fuel crisis you're writing here. You want people to be building out more public transportation, infrastructure,
exactly.
Renewable energies, intra-city mass transit, intercity railroads, complete streets with bike and pedestrian traffic. Does that make a vigorous economy? And who pays for all that?
Exactly.
It
jump-started the economy, the recovery in the Great Depression. It took us a long stretch of the way back to employment.
Kind of civilian conservation corps and all that.
And all that, exactly. It is a public works and a public service project, as well as jump-starting small businesses and worker cooperatives. It creates a diversified economy by doing what we know works. Let's actually create the jobs instead of giving big money to corporations for tax breaks. That doesn't create jobs.
And how
we
do you pay
that.
For all this?
You pay for it, and it's been costed out so that the estimates are approximately the cost of the first stimulus package. But we expect this to have an impact in terms of 25 million jobs as opposed to the 2 to 3 million that were created, which weren't enough to actually prime the pump and to get us out of that recession.
So you're talking Pentagon cutbacks, that would be part of it? Taxing Wall Street, like how? Taxing offshore tax havens, taxing the rich? Is that
exactly,
your...
and putting a tax on Wall Street transactions, which would be a good in and of itself in order to stop this reckless speculation, which is very harmful to the economy in and of itself. That alone could bring in $150 billion dollars a year or more to look at taxing capital gains like income, which is the only fair thing to do. We need to do that. That's where the real money lies, rather than this this $1 million tax that
the
president is talking about.
Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein says let's put the country on a different track. Let's hear from the country. Pittsburgh, Michael, you're on the air with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom and Jill.
Hi, Michael.
I want to ask why I should vote for a party that currently is only on the ballot in 20-some states and whose ultimate goal is to get on the ballot in at most 45 states.
Okay, so let me give you the real pitch why to vote for us. And in my view, you don't have to think of it as a party. You can just think of it as voting for a candidate who's not already bought and paid for by Wall Street. Wouldn't that be a novel thing? I mean, in many ways, the Green Party is the voice of the public interest. We are not hamstrung by lobbyist funding and Wall Street funding and all that. So we have the unique ability to actually do what we say. We don't owe our success to corporate masters. So we can actually do what we need. And when people say, well, the odds are really against that, I would agree with you. And I would say, boy, and we've seen that the odds are really against our ever getting health care that we can afford. The odds are really against students getting out of their indentured servant status. We got 36 million students who cannot pay their loans because they don't have jobs and the jobs they have are paying minimum wage. So the odds are very much tilted against the public right now. As the famous novelist Alice Walker says, the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing they have it to start with. If you actually look at the things we are advocating, these are the things that the majority of the American public supports in poll after poll after poll. Wouldn't it be novel if we could throw off the propaganda campaign that's been rained down upon us for at least the last 10 years, telling us we don't dare stand up for ourselves? Well, what we found through those 10 years is that silence has not been an effective political strategy. And the politics of fear has actually delivered everything we were afraid of, from the offshoring of our jobs, the expanding free trade agreements, declining wages, the unraveling of our health care and our higher education and the environment, our civil liberties. Every reason we were told to be quiet, don't make noise, just go along and you'll get the better outcome, that didn't happen at all. And we've gotten everything that we were afraid of. The truth is, and you can see this looking back over history, what moves us forward is actually standing up. It is the voice of courage, not the voice of fear, that we need to move forward.
There, Michael, in Pittsburgh, the pitch from the Green Party presidential candidate, Dr. Jill Stein. She's with me in the studio in her downtime, not so much lately. She's also a singer in a rock band. Here's a little bit from their, American Dream, from the Circuits to the Sun. She's with us right now, and we're wide open to your questions. What do you think? Are you ready for a Green New Deal? Green jobs for all, huge cuts in the military, universal health care, higher taxes for the rich. Did you vote for Ralph Nader in 2000? Did that cost Al Gore the election? Are you cheering Jill Stein on? What's your hope here for her, the Green Party, American democracy? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with America's green alternative for the White House, Jill Stein, Green Party candidate as of last weekend for President of the United States. Lots of comments online. Jill, Lenny says, definitely what this country needs. The other two parties are useless. Rollo says, this is one Republican who'll be voting green this November. I'm tired of not having any real choice. I'm embarrassed by the GOP. Obama, having given health care to the private insurance mafia and let the banks rule the country, is now persona non grata, at least in Rollo's house. But we've got plenty of others here. I Love Dogs says, the Obama-Romney race is very tight. Stein can only take votes from Obama. Wow, imagine if Romney gets elected. Let's go to Peter in Saranac Lake, New York. Peter, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom. I love your show, by the way.
Thanks, Peter.
Yes, I think the problem we see here is that there needs to be a paradigm shift. We have a materialistic society, and it's tied in with consumerism, which is why Wall Street is so important even to everybody. And even your prison guard who has a 401k wants to see these big corporations succeed so he can get his profits in the form of interest and dividends from his stock portfolio. So, I mean, even if she does put a green economy into play, you're still going to have this consumeristic society right next door, people going to Walmart, buying useless stuff, and then throwing the useless stuff in a landfill 3 weeks later. And I think that's the biggest problem here is it's the mentality of the American people. We're just a very consumeristic, materialistic society. Our economy is predicated on the expansion economically of our consumeristic society, and that's the fundamental problem. That's why you would need six worlds of resources to sustain the American lifestyle across the globe.
Peter, we got it. There's a pretty fundamental challenge. I'll put it to Dr. Stein. Let me get one more call first, if I may, and thanks for yours from Saranac Lake, Peter. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Tom, I'm in agreement with the previous caller. Dr. Stein lets the American public completely off the hook, and in so doing, denies them of any agency or responsibility. I've seen Americans buy cars and houses, jet tourism, iPhones. They want unlimited medical treatment. This has resulted in a corporate and a political system that is dissatisfying to them. But the problem does not lie with the corporation. The problem lies with the American public, and this the Green Party does not address.
Steve, let us pick it up right there. Jill Stein, whoa, first two callers in this segment, and they say, you've got it, you're calculating all wrong here. The democracy you want won't get you the outcome that you really aim for. The American people are not behind you on this. Is that, what do you think?
I would agree that is exactly what the political and economic establishment wants you to think and spends, you know, a lot of money on their PR campaigns to ensure that you think that's the only way to sort of see what's going on. But let me just share with you that there's a very hopeful way to see this. And I think it's really grounded on real reality, real political, psychological, economic realities. Here in Massachusetts, just to give you an example, we ran a referendum in 26 cities and towns in 2008, and that referendum posed the question, what if we just shifted our economic subsidies? We subsidize what we call economic development, and it mostly goes to large corporations. Many of them are multinational and sort of fossil fuel based, part of the old gray economy. We said, well, what if we were to shift those subsidies instead to help create local community based small businesses and worker cooperatives that would meet our needs here more at the community level for food, for energy, for transportation, for clean production? How about them apples? You know, what do you think about that?
Americans are going to move into that kind of Birkenstock world?
Well, we posed that question, you know, and not just in your Cambridge and your Amherst, but also in your Worcester and in the Berkshires and down in the southeastern part of the state, you know, the really disinvested from urban poor economies. And what we found, we didn't have money to put into it. We thought, well, maybe we'll get 15 or 20%. In fact, we got 80 to 95% in every community community. And that gets to the crux of the problem. People always seem to choose the sort of consumerism lifestyle because it's sold as a bill of goods. This is the only way that we will have jobs. But in fact, we can have jobs and a much more sustainable prosperity that is durable for the long haul.
You think maybe this economic crisis has led people to that perception?
Exactly. Not only the economic crisis and indeed the climate crisis as well. It has come home to roost.
Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, and Ori. Ori, thanks for calling. You're on the air, my friend.
Hi, Tom. I'm wondering if because the structure of our political system encourages and perpetuates a two-party system, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it wouldn't be better for just to rebrand as a Republican or Democrat and then run from there.
Dr. Stein, why not just jump into a party and work up through its ranks? I mean, they do have a pretty big lock on the political system.
They do, but unfortunately, they have a lock on who moves within their party as well. And most Greens, I have to say, came to being Green after 10 years or more of trying to be Democrats and just realizing that things are only getting worse. There have been terrific people within the Democratic Party, like Dennis Kucinich, for example. You know, we've been there and we've done that. Barack Obama was going to be that, and we've seen how he got hijacked. So it's... You know, it became clear to me, as I think it has become now to so many voters, that if we want real change, we also have to change the system. We can't just change, you know, put a nice face into the same old corrupt system.
Jackie in Littleton, Massachusetts. Jackie, you're on the air with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jackie.
Jill, earlier you mentioned that President Obama did a good job articulating his vision before he was elected. I'm interested in hearing if there's anything that you feel that he, in office, is doing well. Because I haven't heard anything along
those
lines.
Yeah, you know, I think he has, for example, he has created some green jobs, you know, and he has helped some programs in clean renewable energy, for example. You know, I think he means to do the right thing through his healthcare program. And as I said, the studies show that some people have been helped. But, you know, to me, on balance, we are in a state of emergency. And taking one step forward and a couple steps back is not okay. We are on the precipice of a climate crisis. We continue to teeter on the brink of another economic downturn. We just learned about this new free trade agreement. It was leaked, this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is going to be like NAFTA on steroids in terms of exporting more jobs, continuing to undermine the status of workers in this country. And this agreement also undermines our ability as voters to actually maintain democratic sovereignty in our country. It allows multinational corporations to basically overturn U.S. laws and regulations and to fine us as taxpayers for corporate profits that that corporations are denied because they have to abide by our environmental laws that are going to protect our water supply.
But I hear Jackie looking for a little sympathy for the president here that you're not very deeply willing to give. I mean, what would you do? Here's Jay writing to us online. How would Dr. Stein deal with Congress? Sounds like the same promises Romney and Obama make. Elect me, and I will change things. But what we all now know is that reckoning with an obstructionist Congress makes it nearly impossible to make the promises reality. And that's for, let's say, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney coming in with very big numbers already in Congress. You have zip.
Exactly. And the difference is I do not have the strings attached that they do in terms of who they need to serve.
Yeah, but you have no votes either.
Well, actually, look at what happened with the PIPA bill or the SOPA bill. Who was the advocate for that? You know, that was you know, the Stop Online Piracy Act.
Uh-huh.
You know? And word got out. Word got out. Though there was not an opponent in Congress, there was not the big media, the corporate media certainly wasn't going to talk about this because they benefited from it. Word got out. People informed themselves, and they weighed in, and it was stopped on a dime.
You think democracy could go to work right over the backs of all those Republicans?
Well,
really think so?
Well, put it this way. They can do what they do because the American public is flying blind. We don't know what's going on. We don't have open meeting laws and public record laws, and we don't have good reporting from the corporate press, you know, and
we don't even know
radio
who's contributing to these giant funds now. Mitch McConnell
says we're completely flying in the dark, but in fact the president is better positioned than anybody to actually be the whistleblower in Congress, to be the organizer in chief, not just the you know, the commander in chief, but be the organizer in chief. Let people know what bills are coming up. Hey, we're going to have a vote on Medicare for All next week.
Mm-hmm.
Here are three reasons. Go talk to your elected officials. and ensure that they are representing you. Because when that happens, they cannot get away with the murder they're getting away with now.
Jill Stein wants to be that organizer-in-chief. Dan in Bristol, Vermont. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, 2 points. One is, one thing we haven't mentioned yet so far is how the media has played into marginalizing wonderful candidates like Dr. Stein. Consistently, when there is a debate, a presidential debate series coming up, the debate organizations and often the media set these impossible thresholds. They say, okay, no one has heard of you, and until 15% of the people support you, we're not going to let you into the debate.
Right.
However, we're going to make sure that 15% of the people can't even hear of you in the first place. When a quality candidate gets into a debate, they actually pose a threat to the status quo, and they actually pose questions which the other candidates are not willing to pose and entertain.
But isn't that kind of weird now, Dan, when we see in all the polls that Americans are so unhappy with the direction of the country? Isn't it kind of weird that anybody would say, we don't want to open the doors a little bit here, look a little bit more broadly?
Well, it's not weird at all, because they're protecting their power, and they don't have power legitimately, so they have to protect it in any way they can. You know, talking about her efficacy as president, if Obama's health care initiative had actually been universal health care, he would have received the support of millions of Americans. As it was, he offered a tepid gift to the insurance companies, which didn't get anyone excited on either side. And I think that Dr. Stein's candidacy is a perfect example of how someone who's not beholden to the corporate interest could actually make things happen, because the people would be behind her. No one can get behind another corporatist, middle-of-the-road president.
Dan, thanks for your call. Jill Stein, it's funny, you've actually debated Mitt Romney, but we are not likely to see you on any of the debate stages this year, as far as I can tell, from the rules as they stand.
Well, the rules are 15%, and I think it's in our hands.
15% what?
In public opinion polls. Mm-hmm. I'd say, hey, folks, you know, if you would like to see a real debate, get to my website, jillstein.org, and let's all get the word out. Think of Tahrir Square. Think of Tunisia. Who in their right mind, you know, would have predicted even the day before that uprising began that 3 weeks later an entrenched dictator was going to be out of a job and more?
Tahrir Square, USA.
Exactly.
Wow. Fred in Ayer, Massachusetts. Fred, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I agree with everything that Jill is saying, everything, as most Democrats do. The thing that upsets me the most is she's just going to be a spoiler for Obama. Every vote for her is going to take a vote away from Obama and give it to Romney. And I would bet, when I checked Ralph Nader's contributions, 53% of his contributions came from Republicans. This is a very scary thing right now, because Obama is so close to winning. That's all I have to say. I take my
Fred, I appreciate your call. We'll pick it straight up. Let me get one more call, if I may, first, and we'll look at him back-to-back, Fred. Thanks for yours. Marcia in Iowa City. Marcia, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm really pleased to have this guest on today, and I appreciate the debate. I'd like to suggest that as far as wasted votes go, that any vote for a Democrat or a Republican is a wasted vote as well. Perhaps in this election, as my son says, there is no lesser of two evils to choose from. We've been bought and sold on a two-party system, and we need more than two parties, obviously. Even if you look at the tenets of the parties, they are far from what actually occurs. Consumerism is not the answer to the problems that we have. Class warfare is closer than you know. And to quote Henry Ward Beecher, our dangerous class is not at the bottom. It is near the top of society. Riches without laws are more dangerous than is poverty without law.
Marcia, you're right. You're on it, and I appreciate your call. All right, there's Marcia. She's solid on your bench. She's solid on your team, Jill. But you hear Fred. He says, love you, but you're just going to sink Obama. It's so close, and you're just going to be a spoiler.
Great. Well, I think it's really wonderful that this conversation is happening. Let me just say that. And I want to answer Fred's concerns and say thank you so much, Marcia. You're taking the words right out of my mouth. I couldn't agree with you more. But, you know, Fred's concern, you know, he points out that Nader's financial support may be coming from Republicans.
May have done.
Right, may have been. And I'm not familiar with that data, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Are they pouring money into your coffers?
Well, wait, let me say that many of Nader's votes came from Republicans, too. Exit polls actually made that point, that at least as many of Nader votes were coming from Republicans as from Democrats. You can... You know, if you Google, you know, Nader and the results of the 2000 election, you will find some actual studies of votes in Florida and nationally that underscore that point. There is a, you know, there's a public relations campaign here which is trying to persuade you to use your vote against yourself. And this idea that we have to silence ourselves in order to better ourselves is just not borne out by the facts on the ground.
If your campaign should end up meaning Mitt Romney in the White House, then from your perspective, would it be worthwhile?
From my perspective, this is not it's not an easy way forward. We've got a really entrenched problem here that pervades both parties and beyond in all walks of life. We got a real struggle ahead of us. Our economy is broken. Wall Street is firmly in control. Healthcare, education are collapsing. You name it. And they do not have an exit strategy. It's not going to come from the predators who are running the show. It's going to come from us. We need to stand up and fight for it. We need to fight for it, you know, issue by issue, and we need to fight for it in the voting booth as well. To silence ourselves in the voting booth essentially will silence and undermine everything we achieve outside of the voting booth as well. And history makes the point. You know, how did we move forward? How has all progress been made, whether it was abolishing slavery or getting the right to vote for women or the New Deal or the right to organize unions, to have a 40-hour work week? All of these came because we had a social movement on the ground, which we have today, and we had an independent political party. In each of those cases, we had independent politics, which could articulate the vision, the message, and the specific solutions and drive them forward. Otherwise, we are raising the white flag of surrender. You go in and you vote for the corporate-sponsored candidates. They will use your vote as a mandate for 4 more years of the same. We cannot afford that for jobs, for our health, and for our climate.
Dr. Stein, you say you got into this to do some political medicine. Just got 20 seconds. Can this patient be saved, doctor?
I think it's in our hands. There's no doubt it can not only be saved, but it can be up and dancing and creating a thriving future and community for all of us.
Jill Stein is running for president of the United States as the candidate of the Green Party. What's that website? Since you won't be in the debate, we'll give you another chance.
Well, and you can get us into the debate
by
going to jillstein.org. That's one word, Jill Stein.
There you go, Americans. You've got an option. I don't know if you want it. There it is. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Stein. This is On Point.
Thank you so much.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.